Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have you ever heard of Kathy Williams? She was the only known female Buffalo soldier. Or how about Eugene Bullard? He was a black fighter pilot in World War II. Or how about Blind Tom Wiggins? He's a 19th century pianist of such astonishing talent that he could play different songs on each hand and sing a third song all at the same time. And that was only the beginning of what he could do. Well, these are just some of the unheralded African-Americans we meet in Joel Christian Gill's newest graphic novel, Strange Fruit, Volume 2, More Uncelebrated Narratives from Black History. And Joel joins us now. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
It's a terrific book. And the stories are fantastic. Before we dive into a couple of them, though, I want to read a little something you wrote from the introduction, if that's okay.
Okay.
You wrote, "Our humanity is shared through our stories, but the humanity of black people is placed in a box labeled other that we only open and admire in February. We need these stories to be a larger part of the American story so that people, all people, will realize that there isn't just black history and white history, but one American history shaped by all of us." Hear, hear, I say.
Thank you.
How does this book help go about doing that?
If you think about how, you know, black people have a relationship with America. And if you think about that relationships in general, you make positive deposits, you make negative deposits. And for the last 400 years of American history, the media and society in general has made negative deposits into black history, into for what black people are. And so what we need to do now is make more positive deposits. We were like $400 in the hole. Now we're like $200, right? So we're moving in the positive direction, but we still need to make more positive deposits before we get back to zero. And I think that books like this, Strange Fruit, and sharing the stories of black people actually help make those stories and make that positive deposit. Because when we share our stories, we share bits and pieces of our humanity.
Right. And written in the introduction, just before the introduction, there's just another point I want to read here. Forgive me, I got to find it. Yes, it's in the intro by Professor Regina Bradley.
Yes.
Another point that she makes. I'm sorry, we'll get to these stories, I promise. But there's a really important point. I mean, to what you're saying, she says that you present an understanding in this book that's critical, that black excellence is not a reaction to the racial biases imposed by white American history and culture, but is in fact quite commonplace. And
exactly.
I thought that's really important because right now, I think largely culturally, we talk about this concept of black excellence. But as she points out, it's all as if black excellence exists simply because it's a response that African Americans have to be better because of the dominance of white culture. But that's not what she's saying at all.
No. Yeah. And it's like, you know, the idea that these people existed in a society in which that was not made for them and were able to excel is part and parcel to what makes these stories great American history, because that's the American ethos, right? Pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps.
Yeah.
And black people didn't have boots. So like getting that, being able to do that in a time that they were successful is like extraordinary. And I think we should be celebrating that across, you know, Everybody should.
Right. Well, I think the story that perhaps best epitomizes this in Strange Fruit Volume 2 is the first one that you so beautifully bring to life with your illustrations. Can you tell us about Jordan Anderson?
So Jordan Anderson was a slave who was freed during emancipation, and then he went back, then he moved, you know, gradually moved north. And his master somehow found him and sent him a letter and said, could you come back and help him work with us?
It's kind of amazing. Yeah. Come on back.
Come on back and we'll treat you better than, you know, you were treated before. And Jordan Anderson says, yeah, nah, I ain't gonna do that. Like he said, he writes a letter back basically dictating what life was like. And then he says, if you will send me $11,680, I will consider that as your good faith and maybe even consider coming back at that point.
Okay, so that's the nutshell version of
yes.
the story, because the text of the that's in the graphics for
yes.
for how you render this story is the text of the actual letter.
Yes.
It's so elegantly written. He basically says, he goes through this gentle logic saying, you know, right now in my new job, I'm getting paid $25 a month. So for the years that I was enslaved by you, if we took the same wage, here's what you would owe me.
Right.
And then he allows his owner to remove, you know, to deduct the cost of 3 medical visits he was allowed.
Yeah, and the dry slave humor,
yeah.
which is really interesting. There are a lot of letters like that, and there are a lot of things out there in in the 19th century like that, where slaves come out and say these things because they couldn't be sort of, they couldn't be aggressive because that would feed the narrative, right? So they had to be really smart and very specific about how they said things. So it almost was like a moment when the people were like, oh, I see what you're saying now. Like, we have to read between the lines. So it's really brilliant in the way he wrote this,
right,
to sort of like get at white supremacy in that way, but also with this sort of like, tell everybody I said hi, you know, sort of a thing, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and tell your father thanks for shooting at
yeah.
me, for missing when
yeah.
you shot at me. But he still, you're right, there is that dry humor, but there are moments in the letter where he absolutely, in plain language, talks about the moral corruption of slavery. I'm thinking about the point where the panel that you draw where he's got his arms around his two daughters.
Right, and then...
And he references the violence that was done to his other two daughters by the former family.
He was saying, you know, that the idea that there was no peace for young girls, you know, and like, what kind of peace are my girls going to get if I come back to you? Because remember what happened to those other two girls, you know, and that, you know.
Yeah, he said, you will remember.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you will remember what would happen to those other two girls. It's like, that's a thing that we know about and everybody's talking about it, but nobody's really discussing it. And like, what happens to them? What happens to their humanity? What happens to their agency if we decide to come back and spend any time doing anything for you?
Yeah.
And why does that make sense?
Right.
You know?
One other thing I want to ask you about the story of Jordan Anderson. In your drawings, in the illustrations, when he first receives this letter, he has his wife read it?
Yes.
And I'm seeing that correctly. And then
yes.
he has her write down his dictation.
Well, that was artistic license
okay.
on my part.
Because
okay. he probably dictated it to someone else. She probably didn't write it, but that was just part. Like, it was like having another person show up. It would have made it more complicated.
Okay, so. Okay. I just wanted to be sure. But then that's one of the challenges you have with presenting these stories through... In comics, in a graphic novel, that like, when and where do you take our artistic license? Because it adds to our understanding of the actual story.
Yeah, and I think most people don't realize that when you're drawing comics, you're the true auteur of the story. Like, you have to think about what kind of pants people are wearing. Like, nobody reads a book about Thomas Jefferson and goes, what kind of pants were he wearing? What does his shoes look like? But I have to think about that. So, like, you have to go back through the process of thinking about what, you know, what the room looks like, you know, like, everything about that whole situation. I had to, like, look it up and research it to, like, because I couldn't just draw, like, the chair in my living room because it wouldn't have made sense. So
right.
I had to, like, think about those kind of things.
So, just out of curiosity, was Jordan Anderson's letter ever... Did he receive a response?
No, I don't. There was never any information about whether he got a response. I think my mom just asked me that same question. She was like, did he get the money? I was like, I don't think so, Mama.
All right, so let's talk about another one. Kathy Williams, an African-American woman who was the only known female Buffalo soldier. Tell us about her.
Yeah, so the Native Americans called black soldiers who fought in the Union Army Buffalo soldiers because of their skin and their hair and because of the way they fought. And so Kathy Williams was part of the infamous thing called contraband. She was a slave that was captured during the war, and that means she became property. And so eventually she had a cousin who was a soldier, and he had told her about, like, soldiering is much better than cooking and cleaning. And so she was like, well, I'm going to go do that. And so she snuck out and got away and cut her hair and posed as a man, changed her name to William Cathay, and joined the Union Army. And she served for about 2 years in the Union Army.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So one more I want to talk about. Well, actually, we could talk about all of them. They're so good. But because I mentioned him in the intro, Blind Tom Wiggins. I mean, once you learn about his story, you think he should have been a superstar.
Yeah. Like, Tom's story is like probably my favorite story in this book, specifically because, you know, this was before autism, before anybody had an understanding about what autism was. And Blind Tom Wiggins was actually thrown in. Like, his parents were bought, and because they thought he would die because he was blind. And ill-formed, they like, we're just going to throw him in with everybody else. And it turns out he stayed with his mother so much, and they started to realize that he could mimic any sounds.
Yeah.
So he was mimicking birds. He was mimicking the cooking, the cleaning. He would do everything. And he overheard one of the master's children learning the piano and playing the song over and over. This is actually this is a story that was told. And she was doing it wrong. And so he goes in, he's like 5 years old, and just plays it perfectly. And she was like, oh my God, he was like, yeah, you were doing it wrong. Like, you was doing it wrong is what he says to her. which is interesting about Tom is that he could play music. He could play, you know, one hand, you know, like what you said earlier, he could play with one hand, but he would do the sounds of things too. Like, he did a song about the Battle of Manassas, and he would do all the sounds of the explosions.
Mm-hmm.
And The other thing about Tom is that because of his disability, they couldn't just beat him and make him do what they wanted him to do. Like, they had to, like, bribe him. They had to, like, treat him kindly, because if Tom wasn't happy, he wasn't going to go on and yeah. on the stage and play. And so, like, they, like, it was, it's a really interesting thing. And I talk a little bit about that with Millie and Christine McCoy, the two-headed nightingale, because they did the exact same thing. And it's like, it's really interesting thing because of the disability that they had. Mm. It gave them some agency over their lives. And Tom wouldn't have recognized his agency, like, you know, because he, you know, the only thing he could do was play music. Yeah. He couldn't really put his shoes on. He couldn't feed himself. And so the only thing that he could do was mimic sounds. But, you know, because of that, you know, Tom actually had a better life in some instances than some other people would have had.
This is the second volume.
This is volume two.
What have you heard back from folks after the first volume came out?
Well, I talk about sharing stories a lot. And when I did with Strange Fruit volume one, I went to my son's school, and we live in New Boston, New Hampshire. And if you've ever been to New Hampshire, you know when I leave there, I significantly decrease the black population. But a little kid at my son's school, they wrote me a letter. And after I told him about the stories and, like, this is your history, he said, thank you for sharing our black history. And that's exactly what I want. I want little white kids to, like, read these stories and say, this is our history. These are the people that we should yeah. aspire to be like.
Wow. Well, Joel Christian Gill is author of Strange Fruit, Uncelebrated Narratives from Black History, Volumes 1 and now 2. It's been a real, real pleasure to have you back. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And by the way, we're going to go out of this segment with some music by Tom Wiggins.
Yes.
This is Cyclone Gallop. He wrote it in 1887, and it's played here by modern pianist John Davis. So let's listen to that. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.